Hey, you. Yes, I mean you, dear listener. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this Warui Desho podcast. We're so happy to have the pleasure of your company today. If you've listened to us before and like our show, you might be wondering how you could support us, since we won't take your money. This podcast will continue to be free, but if you'd like to show your appreciation, please consider leaving us a rating and review on iTunes, as those help our discoverability. If you don't use iTunes, that's fine too. You can follow us and like and share our content on SoundCloud, YouTube, and Twitter. Additionally, we love getting your feedback, positive or negative. Tweet us at WarueiDesho or email us at WarueiDesho@gmail.com. Whether or not it gets read on the show, I can assure you, we all read every tweet and email you send us. And once again, dear listener, we thank you so much. Now please, enjoy the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome, ladies, gentlemen, and MBs. It is Warui Desho, a bad anime podcast in which two former Rurouni Kenshin fans break down anime. This is Stream of Thought, where we do that one episode at a time, and we are looking at Darling in the Franxx. This is episode 15. We're 15-ing. It's the quinceañera edition of streaming. Stream of Thought. I am the Subtle Doctor, along with, as I said, former Rurouni Kenshin fan, Dragon Slayer, Waffle Eater, enjoyer of toy poodles, Shadon. Hello, Shadon.
I do all those things simultaneously, folks. Kill me some dragons and eat waffles while doing it.
Episode 15. Gion. Are you ready, Shadon?
Yes, I am ready to fall down the stairs again, because that's honestly what watching this episode felt like at times to me. Like I was tumbling over backwards, just confused and dazed. And in some way, that's entirely intended. Like, this episode is a chaotic battle. It's the best battle of the show so far. It actually delivers on a couple of things I've said previously about how this show is underwhelming as far as its battles go. Like, numbers in particular. Finally, we have actual swarms of Klaxosaurs coming out. Like, this is full-on Zerg, this. This is the bugs from Starship Troopers. This is just numeric superiority, and they actually show it on screen. So thank God for that. But otherwise, it's a hot mess. It really is. I just had so many questions going through for it. I just constantly was watching it in my head slightly tilted to the side, going, What? That's a thing? That's not a thing? So, I'm ready. I'm ready to talk it out. I'm ready to hand on chest, lying on the brown couch, just talk about my Franxx problem.
You call it a hot mess, so let's get messy.
Wow, 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 wow.
Here we go. Gion was directed by Toshifumi Akai, who was the co-episode director on the first episode of this show and the third. So we haven't talked about him in a while, but he has been largely a key animator on stuff. He's got a really long CV. He's worked on a whole bunch of stuff. It seems like he was plucked from Idolmaster crew that the series director comes from.
That's amazing, because there's definitely a moment in this episode where the gang all strike a pose, and I just thought, wow, what the fuck?
Yeah, for sure.
Strike a pose.
at times he's been an assistant animation director, but I don't see any other credits where he's been an outright episode director. I mean, he has been for endings. Like, I don't know, I see randomly, I've scrolled across here to Sound of the Sky. He's directed the ending to that. But mostly animation direction, or at most, a lot of times assistant AD or key animator. But he's, you know, in the big chair, so to speak, for this episode of Franxx. And the writer, here the writing credits given to, once again, Hiroshi Seko, who penned the script for the previous episode, as well as your favorite episode, episode 11, Partner Shuffle is back. I get to say Partner Shuffle again, even though that's not really going on.
It did
happen this episode, yes. We had a partner shuffle. Ichigo and Goro, come on down. Get ready to have a new partner in your mecha.
It was the after-hours version.
Because it's time for partnership. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those are the Franks co-pilots for this episode, we'll say. So now, let's get into it. First thing that happens is a briefing. We are shown something of the Grand Crevasse. The Squad 13 is told, hey, we're going to go and win back the Grand Crevasse for Papa. He's wanted this for a long time. And when they show it, it just looks like a giant dome.
Mm-hmm. It looks like a hot cross bun.
Or a Eucharist wafer.
Well, they break that pretty hard by the end.
They sure do. To reveal the blue sky above. But there's some walls they have to get through. But yeah, it looks like a kind of a flat technodrome with a communion wafer roof. I don't know. But so is that the Grand Crevasse? The Grand Crevasse is below it, right? Because at the end of the episode, the robo-bishops say,
the way to the Grand Crevasse has been opened.
So,
Doc,
I suppose it's below there.
Like, here's the thing. We still don't know what it is. And I'm talking from the audience perspective here. The kids don't need to know. I've said many times that they don't need to be told directly. They can be kept in the dark. But it might help if we, you know, us mere mortals trying to understand the grand tapestry of this often infuriating show, might be clued into exactly what the Grand Crevasse is and why they want to go there so badly. I mean, I still have a clue why. Did you know, Papa leave his car parked in there and they want to go get it back?
I'll tell you like I said a couple of episodes ago. One of those need-to-know basis things, like one of those James Bond films.
And I do need to know, so cough up, show, please. Like, we're now, like, what, less than 10 episodes left to go. What the fuck is going on? Like, why are we doing this? Like, I think, is it Kokoro, or is it someone else who asks, what is the Grand Crevasse? And, well...
That's a stupid question. Shut up.
I love how Nana does this, because if she was in The Matrix, then she would be dodging bullets doing this, because that question is avoided. That's a swerve right there.
Yes, yes.
No, we're not going to tell you what it is, but here's pictures.
If this was Kaiji, we would see like a metaphorical manifestation of the mental state of Nana would be in The Matrix, like Neo dodging bullets.
Yeah, pretty much. This scene just feels redundant. Here's things you're doing. Off you go. Bye.
Yeah, and they introduce the, like, I hate to, like, invoke the name of Evangelion again, but it reminded me of that when, where it just sort of pastes words on the screen to illustrate the mental state of a character.
Oh, this, I hated this.
I really didn't like the way they used it at all.
I'll concede that the problem with this is not really so much the show's fault as it is the subtitles, because they have to occupy more screen space by default.
Yeah, yeah.
But it also really doesn't help that both the subtitles and the original Japanese are in a color that kind of makes it hard to see when it's against when it's against black background, it's fine. But otherwise, it's half the time really difficult to make out. Although that's not the least of my complaints with the text in this episode, because we switch locations so often. I honestly thought like it was going to start saying like Plantation 13, 20 past 1 in the afternoon, partially cloudy with a chance of rain.
Should there be a scroll below?
Yeah.
This is just for that shit.
Wasn't that a Naked Gun skit?
I can't decide though, like, because Monogatari gets a pass for me on a lot of things, including this, honestly, but it's able to do amazing things, so it can kind of get away with it. I would almost rather them... I can't decide. So they could do what they did here, which is just paste it on the screen. Or they could do what they do in Monogatari, which is just to cut to a card, like, every few seconds. And that can be, if you're not really, really good at carrying pace and tone that you want if you don't have a good grip on those and moving them forward. That can do. I can see doing that really fucking up everything about an episode. So I don't want them to do that. But I don't like this either, so I don't really know. I mean, perhaps they could have just had him, I don't know, think out loud, you know, inner monologue type stuff. Or, well, I don't... Fuck if I know, man. Because it did convey some interesting information. I just wasn't a huge fan of the method of conveyance.
No. The briefing at least does show us some images from the battle, and as I alluded to before, like... I've complained previously about like how the show doesn't really do big numbers as far as battles are concerned. This time it does. It pulls off really well. Like, okay, the Klaxosaurs are all copy-paste versions of each other. They're just banelings from StarCraft, pretty much. That's what they look like. Although there are some ones that are like giant towers that shoot lasers. But at least we actually have the big numbers. So part of me wants to retroactively criticize the show for not delivering on this previously when they clearly could have done. And then I think to myself, oh yeah, trouble production, cut them some slack. So I'll be fair. But I actually really like the mood of the battlefield on this. Like, we've all been very spooky and very dusty.
Yeah.
It certainly fits totally. The atmosphere very well that they're going for. Also, we do get to see that Strelizia is already in the battlefield in Tiger form.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, oh boy, did I have a chuckle at this. So I thought, okay, how many pilots did we have in the previous episode that we're going to go with 0-2? And she's already gone through all of them? Like, I mean, I go through buffets really fucking fast if I'm hungry. Like, I will rip through a sausage roll tray like no one's business. But, like, they haven't even breached, like, the main line yet, and already 0-2's done that. Like, I always thought the 3x riding thing was bullshit, but now I really do want to know, like, how long is it that you have to ride with her before you die? Like, how long did they spend just, like, swapping people over? Like, did they actually recall her back to go and put new pilots in? How would they do that if she's gone? Fuck.
I mean, how much time has passed? They were not that far from the Grand Crevasse. I don't think last episode.
Were all of the pilots crammed into the cockpit? And then they were just like, oh shit, well, Jim's dead. Best pull him off and I'll sit down. Did they have a bunch of straws?
Well, we'll get to this later, but I don't think that that's possible. I don't think more than two in a cockpit is possible.
No, that would make too much sense.
Yeah, I think she just probably, like, gathered them all in a room and killed them all. Just to be done with it. I think she just executed them.
Man, I hope someone broke out of that by saying, before we begin, Miss 0-2, can I go to the bathroom, please? And you just hear a car driving off in the distance. It's like, no, I'm out of here. Fuck this noise.
Well.
I actually want to point out that, by the way, ahead of time, there is no one in the cockpit for Zero, like, with 0-2. Like, not a dead body, even, I mean to say. Which is something I'll bring up later. It's just a small thing I wish they had done to illustrate her nature a bit more for Hero when he does eventually, as you guess, get back in there. But we'll come to that.
We will. So, we get to see also here... the Robo Bishops
in space.
Yes, and they're the Star Chamber.
You were right. Actually, it is the Star Chamber.
It is literally
in space,
yes, among the stars. And Dr. Franks there with them. Werner, by the way, we learned this episode. Werner Franks. Ah, yes, it is I, Werner. I've come to visit you.
Do you reckon it's actually Werner von Franks? Like, well, if he had a von in the middle, it would be perfect.
It would be amazing. It would be. It would be so perfect. He's there, and the bishops are glad that they are going to win back the Grand Crevasse. It turns out that that's one of the two goals they have. They're now revealing the hidden second goal that they're working on concurrently to this. And I had forgotten this until looking at my notes just now, that the construction of Hring Horny is almost complete.
Yeah.
It's just Ring Horny with an H in the front.
I'm sure that there's a meaning behind that somewhere. But again, just no. Every time we go to this fucking exposition space station, I'm fucking bored. Like,
yeah.
You're not telling us anything. Saying that you're building something with this elaborate name is great and all, but it could very well just be a vibrator for all I know.
That's exactly what it is.
That's all it could be. I don't know what the fuck this thing is. Is it a fucking car? Is it, you know, a BattleBot? What the fuck? Like, tell us something of substance here.
It's so late in the game. A lot is revealed this episode, and then it feels like late in the game. And so I think that's probably why, at times, this episode feels a little rushed to wrap up previous conflicts, because I guess they now maybe have some ideas of how they want to go to the finish line and what they want to explore. We'll get to some of those at the very end of the episode. But yeah, this is one I don't really have a lot of goodwill left for the Robo Bishops and the scheme. Like, it's kind of they've had their time to show that they were interesting and doing things that interested me, and it's kind of passed.
It's honestly whatever. As boring as any workroom meeting I've ever been to. That's the mood I have when I'm watching this, because I'm having terms thrown at me that I don't understand because no one's taken the time to explain it to me. This isn't even basic stuff. This is neologisms, you know, new words, new concepts. I mean, we actually now get to the Grand Crevasse. We still don't know what it is. And now they're throwing in this other thing that they're building. And I'm like, why the fuck should I even care? If I had the subtitles turned off at this point, it wouldn't have made a difference. The only thing I would have learned, in fact, the only thing we do learn of substance, if you call it that, for this entire scene, is Frank's first name. Oh, great. Fan-fucking-tastic. Two thumbs up. Gripping storytelling.
Yeah, it's an important fact.
Yes. I mean, the only thing that's in that space station, to be honest, is padding. That's what it is.
Right. So the Nines are in battle with Strelizia. As you say, in Tiger mode. And Squad 13, I know this is your favorite scene in the whole show. They bid Hero farewell. They go out, and then, honestly, if this was a different show, the scene would make me nervous because it feels like just a huge death flag. But, I mean, nothing. The show has shown its hand insofar as, it's nothing's going to happen to these guys.
It's too late now. It's too late to start building up tension for people dying. Up until this episode, actually, I need to say that in this episode, we do see characters die. They're actually our favorite, you know, C team, the 26 kids. They die.
Who have grown mysteriously gray-haired, the one of them.
I don't even remember what he originally looked like.
Just dark hair. So he's the piloting has aged him greatly, you know, even though he still has his
just like watching this
young
show.
Skin and stuff like that. You're right, he does. He's just gotten gray hair from doing it. I guess it's supposed to show you that this normally takes a lot out of you, and that Squad 13 is somehow either just blooming and at the beginning of their thing, or special. Also, I think both are probably true, but whatever. Yeah, we see that guy, and you're right. Protocol 32, aka Suicide Bomb.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Order 66.
Yeah,
that's what right. That's not the last Star Wars reference I'll make this episode, by the way. But, that's the thing, this is the first episode where we see actual, characters we've seen before die. And I didn't really care for the 26 kids, but, you know, they serve a purpose and are relatively fine. We also see a plantation get destroyed in this episode.
We do, that's right.
But this is, less than 10 episodes left now. And it would have really helped the show in the previous battles we've seen before now if they had actually had some tangible sense of loss, things that can't be recovered from. The most damage we've seen to the Franxes, to be honest, has been Delphinium's arm being ripped off, and well, that's back in place now, so that didn't really even matter. None of the characters have been very seriously injured except for Mitsuru, and he's back on his feet. This fight, I have no idea what the stakes are, why they want the Grand Crevasse. We don't have a sense of mortality of our heroes. Like, Hero's not going with them, and again, not with Strelizia not there. Like, Strelizia's in tiger form, but I think it's fair to say that Strelizia is intentionally much more effective in its full-blown two-person tango and inside of it form, you know? I mean, hell, that's what they need to actually win the day in the end of this episode. So, there's no tension, there's no stakes. Like I said in episode 6, and this is why I said to Doc off-cast, I felt this was episode 6 2.0, in that it does a lot of things episode 6 does, and it does some of them better, particularly the action, but it makes a lot of the same cardinal errors. Because basically I have nothing to care about. I mean, okay, Zero-Two's out there. Is Zero-Two in any actual danger at any point in this episode? No. So that's a thing. The plantation gets attacks at the end. Do we actually see anyone, like, in the civilian populace get hurt? No. But we do see Zorame's, you know, surrogate mother person very briefly. I was like, oh, hey, you're relevant again. Hello there.
Yes, yes. Call back.
I can just imagine her husband, like, coming out of the virtual machine, like, it's like, well, what happened in my absence? What happened while I was away, honey? And she's like, oh, nothing, dear. Just as a Klaxor flies past the window.
Yeah.
This battle in a vacuum is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Better than the most of the other battles before. In fact, it probably is the best battle in the show. But that's damning with faint praise when, again, I still have no sense of, you know, anything, any tension here, no stakes, no idea why they're even doing this. And, well, you might say, well, what about, you know, the plantation blowing up? Because they actually blow one of them up deliberately to try and breach the Grand Crevasse. And I'm like, I didn't know any of the people on there. We've known for a long time now that the adults, like Ape in particular, probably don't have, you know, good intentions towards anyone. They're quite clearly, you know, evil, or at least certainly, you know, antagonistic.
There's also some bullshit regarding that in which one of the Robo Bishops say that the, I guess, was it Plantation 28 maybe? Like that they're 98% backed up.
It doesn't even matter. No.
So I feel like that there's going to be some kind of, like, yes, revelation or moment that the people didn't actually die. Like, their minds are in the computer, or they've been transferred to Klaxosaur eggs, or something ridiculous.
Altered carbon. That's what it's going to turn out to be.
I'm not seen.
Yeah, it's just going to be altered carbon. Like, you know, we'll just download you in and out of bodies, it's fine. You know, no biggie. Just put you on a hard...
Kaiba.
Just put you on a hard disk, it's good. I don't feel like I have a lot really to say about this episode in terms of what actually happens beyond, like, stuff at the end. Like, everything in the lead up to that just feels like it either doesn't make sense or is just really confusing or contradictory. Or even both.
We'll go through it. Yeah, I'm sure you'll have things to say. I mean, I do agree with you that the battle was good for this show, but man, I mean, it really isn't saying, like, this is a very below par anime for robot battles, especially by the standards of Trigger, but just in terms of just mecha period. I mean, I've someone who's seen a lot of mecha shows. I'm a fan of the genre, and boy, this is not a show I'd recommend anybody watch for the battles, because they are underwhelming.
Or if you want to watch it for the battles, watch clips of them on YouTube.
But then there's way better places you can go for better robot battles.
Oh, for sure. But, like, that's how bad it is as far as the context goes. You can watch these without knowing anything about what's going on, and it doesn't matter because, lo and behold, I don't know what's going on. I don't know anything. Like, watching this on YouTube out of context, or watching it as I have done now with all the episodes before it, 14 of them, by the way, it doesn't matter. There's no difference. By the way, about the Nines, we get introduced to the Nines Custom Franks, and we also get to see them piloting as well.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
That was going to be my next point.
Go on then, my good sir. I read your mind, by the way. That's why I was like,
yeah. Thank you for that. We are in fact connected in a Frank's cockpit right now. That's all what you can see into my.
All right. Let's answer the question: who's in what seat? are we gonna appease the shippers today, Doc? Is this gonna happen?
All right. Let's let Google do this.
Oh no. I was gonna flip a coin myself.
I'm gonna have Google flip the coin. Do you want heads or tails? I assume that you're flipping for these upstanding dominant position.
I'm flipping for the dominant position, and I'm gonna go for tails.
All right, Google, flip this coin. Tails.
Tails it is. Yes! Yes, and that means, of course, that I'm going to die horribly, because that's what happens to everyone who's in those positions.
At least I get to talk with the robot's mouth. Yeah,
you actually get some of the relatively cool stuff. You actually get to feel like you're piloting a giant robot, whereas I'm just here like, well, these handles are shit. God. It'd be better piloting a Franks with a Gravis gamepad, to be honest. Yeah,
I loved the Gravis gamepad.
In fact, as I play fighting games, yeah, give me a DS4 or give me, you know, let me have a fight stick or mm-hmm. something. I'd be down with that.
Yeah, give me my Sega Saturn 6-button controller.
No. Clearly, it's the Wiimote. That's the optimal way of piloting a Franks.
Motion Plus.
Oh, no. If you really want to ruin it, the Kinect.
Swery designed the firmware for the Franks. the true D4 experience. Episode 3 of D4 is just Darling and the Franks. Okay, so the Nines, getting back to the Nines. Of course, they're fucking sociopathic, right? We see them first carving up Galaxosaurs, and then they laugh maniacally, and they're like, more battle, kill, blood. And it's like, this isn't the most incredibly cookie-cutter thing ever. And
it's a clearly very nuanced portrayal of who will end up being our villains, you know? Like,
of course, by the way, they are, the boy and girl positions are swapped in their cockpit, because the Nines are so weird! Look at how crazy they are, everybody! I thought that was so dumb. It feels like it's done only for that reason.
Yeah. So, okay, let's talk about this. Let's dig into this a little bit, because I've had a really, really nasty thought about this.
They even get a cool insert song that they don't deserve.
So, okay, let's talk about this thing about the Nines being swapped over. And, like, I initially thought to myself, okay, could there be a possibility maybe of the Nines being androgynous or, you know, non-cis, shall we say? I thought about it and I thought no, because I think that Miku, in the episode in which she actually meets Alpha 9 when they go to the garden for tests, says he's hot. So at least as far as she thinks, he's a boy. And I'm just going to go with the assumption, because of what we've seen before between Kuno and Ichigo, that it's a girl who's piloting with her, you know, controlling the butt paddles and all that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a non-zero possibility that Alpha 9 is a lady, but I think the safe assumption is yours.
Yeah, and here's the thing, right? I wouldn't normally actually argue in favor of heteronormativity, but hear me out when it comes to this particular point, folks. I've seen arguments made that sometimes that it's fair to conflate a character's sexuality or their gender with also their morality, and that sometimes you'll have stories in which the very het characters...
Oh, yeah.
You know, are the heroes, and then the ones who are not are the villains. Kill the Kills had a slight bit of flack of this because Ragu is bisexual.
Yeah, to emphasize their strangeness, their otherness. That's exactly what I'm getting at that is happening with the Nines.
Yeah, and here's the thing about the Nines, right? It's inevitable that they're going to end up fighting our heroes. I can't see what other purpose they'd be in the show for. Like, if they just dropped off the face of the earth or were friendly all the way through, what's the point? Like, they're, you know, clearly the lapdogs of the bad guys here. So, run this by your heads just for a second. We have our, you know, distinctly het, distinctly cis, not one of the, you know, guys in our group of heroes is the stamen, or, the pistol. Fuck it, fuck the flower terminology, the one who's, you know, bending over, let's just go with that, right? None of the guys are the ones bending over in our group of heroes, right? They're the... Vanilla.
Yeah, they all are in the dominant position.
Yeah, they're all vanilla, a lot of them. Both the girls and the guys in terms of the roles that they fulfill. And also their gender. And with possible exception, maybe Kuno, but I think at this point that boat has sailed as far as exploring that. Oh yeah, by the way, just to bring up points that some of people have addressed on
Mitsuru.
Twitter, I really don't think anything's going to come of that. That's this, like, with 9 episodes left, I can't fathom how they're going to fit any of that in or if it'll even be relevant. Point being, like, I've seen someone mention on Twitter, and I'm very sorry that I can't remember their name. It's something that Doc actually retweeted and I read. we've had character-focused episodes for the guys, but not for the girls. I just felt like bringing that up because, again...
Yeah, that was, that was Isaac. That was Isaac. That was at I Bless All from Mage in a Barrel and Crunchyroll. Yeah, he astutely pointed that out, and I think it's something that we've also said on the podcast before as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, I mean, if Ikudo is, you know, a lesbian, you might want to explore that and what that means to her in this particular world, like, that we've built up.
Nah.
No, not going to do that. This is why, ultimately, it's perfunctory whether or not she is or is not at this point, as far as I'm concerned, because they're not going to spend any time doing it. They're knee-deep in the actual war thing now and what's happening, the narrative mystery, which I don't care about, but the writers clearly do, to the extent of, you know, not caring about any character in play. So, fuck that. But to go back to Nines, if you wanted to read into it, if they go evil, it turns out that they are not het. Well, they already are, because we've seen them in different positions here. And our heroes, you know, the ones who fight them, and they're the good guys. You can read that quite negatively. I mean,
oh, yeah.
People have done that with Ragyu in Kill la Kill. I don't agree quite so much with that, because I think that there is a certain extent to which it's not reasonable to conflate sexuality with morality. It depends on the individual product. But when you have a show like Frank's, which is sexually coded as it is, with the whole piloting thing, which, again, I don't even get why it's a fucking thing in the first place. Because everything we've learned at this point has nothing to do with, you know, puberty or sexuality or anything like that. It's paid lip service to it, best. So, if it turns out that it is going to go that way, then either A, we've got the fact that the Nines are all, you know, het and cis, in which case, why do we not have more unconventional pairings amongst our heroes? Oh, wait, I know exactly why, because it's weird and gross for, you know, the target audience, apparently, quote-unquote, because fuck that. Or we have the alternative, which is worse, which I've already discussed. So I don't think there's any getting out of how this is going to progress now that they've opened this can of worms. It's dumb. It's stupid. They're just cartoon villains at this point, and unfortunately they're coded in such a way, as far as this whole piloting arrangement goes, that just either opens plot holes or just makes the show look really, really insipid and also insulting. Pick your poison. Oh, by the way, also they have glowy horns as well. Not regular horns, but the horn, they just glow because, of course, they fucking
ethereal
do.
Horns that aren't really there, I think.
Yeah, why? Fox if I know. Whatever.
Well, no, so I guess my theory would be, right, is that they're an experimental group like 02, only they were not as heavily modified. I don't know if they were human or Klaxis or first. Who knows, but... my guess is that they were human first, and they were a Klaxis sword a little bit, but there's something that would run contradictory to, like, there's a fact reveal later in the episode that would seem to dispel that notion, but the show is not exactly internally consistent with its logic, so who can say? On Kill la Kill, I will just, not to go into too much of a digression, but I think that the arguments about Ragyu, or is it, I can't remember, is it Ragyo or Ragyu?
It's not Ragyu, which is a brand of bolognese sauce in the UK.
Yeah, same here. It's not the spaghetti sauce. Is it Ragyo or Ragyu?
We'll just call it Rags.
Okay, I don't remember. But the villain, I think you have the counterweight of Mako. I think it's really easy to read Mako as a queer character, and she's quite good, morally speaking. It's a little bit easier to skirt away from that charge when you're dealing with that material. But yet again, we have the same studio seemingly pulling this, where if it just seems like it's such an easy thing to do for people. Make the villains sexually queer, sexually quote-unquote deviant, have these like outlier sort of minority tastes, to underscore their sociopathy, their strangeness, their differentness, you know what I mean? And conflate queer in terms of sexual preference and gender with, like, queer in terms of, like, your worldview or your humanity or whatever, your morality. I think that's happening here, and it's dumb. Let's move forward to the point in the battle in which all the Klaxosaurs get the fuck out of the way. They part like the Red Sea in front of the Technodrome here because a super layman class,
whatever that means,
Klaxosaur, yeah, is burrowing up from beneath the surface of the Earth. And, You know, we've had the GameCube, we've had the Norelco 3-in-1 beard trimmer, and this time we get the Jawa tank from
yes!
Star Wars A New Hope.
Yes, that's exactly what I thought! Like, fucking hell, it's the exact same shape!
It really
it's
is.
It's even
it
on wheels!
I know, and it's on the tank treads. It just has a fucking face. That's the only difference. It's just, at first I thought it was like a cruise ship because I could only see the kind of tip of it. But as the dust cleared, it's just like, oh.
I would love it if it turned out Jawas were the real villains of Franks. That would be amazing. Hootini! That would be brilliant. That would be brilliant. I mean, imagine if instead, like, when the Klaxosaur starts barfing out more Klaxosaurs, it just started barfing out Jawas by the thousands. That'd have been amazing.
I would enjoy that. I'd be up for that.
Are we ever going to get... Well, okay, actually, no, I tell a lie. We did have a Klaxosaur design that didn't look like something else in 9, was it? The one with Goro? The one that was just, like, a weird stretchy thing that couldn't be killed easily?
Oh, yeah, the sort of Lovecraftian design.
Yeah. But, like, honestly, like, this is just getting silly at this point. Guys, Trigger, A1, like, do some Google search images. Like, just get some reference material. Like, have you guys been living under rocks?
Like, I have an idea. Wait a minute. I have an idea. What if it's a giant trapezoid? Do it. Go to print.
The next Klaxosaur, like, well, in fact, no, we're going to find out at the end that there is an even bigger Klaxosaur on this.
Yeah.
And good God, does it look goofy.
Let's save the reveal. So this is the point in the episode when the 26th squad, gray-haired as they are now, do their suicide mission.
Yep, execute order 66.
Right.
It's protocol 32.
Protocol 32. Well, the Klaxosaur, I think we said before, it actually does destroy a plantation. 28, I think, that was mostly backed up.
It was 26. It was their own plantation.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, yeah. Uh-huh. 26. So it's heading for 30. And 26, their sacrifice does not destroy the Klaxosaur, but it immobilizes it. It
takes the rims off the wheel, scratches the paintwork.
But the thing tips forward such that its head, it's... pointy head burst through the surface of the wall.
I really thought I was just going to rest against it.
Like, I know.
Wait, it slows down as it falls and then speeds up, and I just thought it was just going to go dink and just like make a little ping noise, but no, it does crack the wall.
Guys, a little help here. Stuck on the plantation. But no, its head pierces the wall and it proceeds to spew forth thousands of tiny Klaxa spiders to infiltrate the city.
Live for the swarm!
And we're shown 02 running to stop it. And we see inside the cockpit, I think for the first time in the episode, and we see that she has antlers. Not just horns anymore. They're the upgraded new model. And she's, like, glowy-eyed without... Yeah, she looks very, very different.
You know, right, when it comes to depictions of demons and, like, goat-like satyr creatures and all that, like, the horns... I have never seen horns branch off like they do in that in any sort of art depiction. Usually they either are just massive, like, single blocks, or they curve, like, or curl like goat's horns, because a lot of satanic imagery is based around goats and, you know, and such. So... I don't get what the images say. Like, I honestly thought maybe they were connecting directly with Strelizia. Fucks if I know. Whatever. I mean, can you imagine walking around with that, though? Like, how does she get out of the cockpit once she's done? Like, does she bang her head? Can she, like, go through, like, low headroom?
You're not supposed to think about these things. You're overthinking. To me, they reminded me of some of the line work on the sides of the Klaxosaurs, like the blue glowy lines. This may or may not be intentional. We see that, of course, and then we get the lovely hero back in the briefing room, and Werner strolls in, and they they commiserate about how pitiful Zero Two is, and I just wanted to smash their heads together.
Yeah, not like either of you two have done anything about it. In fact, come to think of it, why doesn't Hero, like, have any memory of what happened to Zero Two under Franks's... Like, he saw him in the room torturing her.
Yeah.
Like...
Why didn't he just be like, what's up, fucker?
I wasn't expecting him to confront him about this, but at least, like, if he just remembered it and just like, wait a minute, this guy's bad. Also, apparently...
this guy's bad.
Also, apparently Dr. Franks, like... That's about as much as I expect him to be able to think, because he's a thick piece of pig shit. Like, the only thing that's floating around in his head is an amoeba, maybe two if I'm generous. But, like, on top of that, also...
There's a lot of room in here. You can come live with me.
God. But on top of that, like, how the fuck did Franks get back to Earth so quickly? Like,
it's amazing.
Like, he's done that before where he just walks in from the right hand side of the camera, and I'm like, where the fuck did you come from?
Weren't you just in space?
go back to your nursing home, Gramps. Like, seriously. But yeah, so this prompts Zero to like leave and think about, you know, how much of a prick he's been. No, not really, that he doesn't think that.
Like, no.
A lot of the language he uses in this episode, apart from when he is with Zero Two, is very, very self-centered in a way that I really, really did not like. I mean, I've had this working theory for ages now that he genuinely actually doesn't really care about her and is just saying all this to save face in front of her. I mean, I've made the Sam Witwicky point before. He is starting to feel very much like Sam Witwicky from fucking Transformers, an incompetent wanker who thinks he's the big cheese in all this, but doesn't actually treat the people who are genuinely competent with the modicum of respect they deserve, or at least only says so in public. Like, he's saving face so much of the time.
I do share your theory to an extent, but what I would say, for me, rather than saving face, I do feel like he's selfishly motivated, but I feel like his passion, at bottom, I feel like it's the desire for him to have a certain experience, right? He wants to fly. That is the main thing. It feels like that. In reading his dialogue, that's the conclusion I come to, more so than wanting Zero Two to be happy, her well-being. Like, all those things are present, but, like, it seems like when the rubber meets the road, he's thinking about himself and the experiences he would like to have. And that's, like, what he's after more than anything else. And it does... I mean, I guess you could, like... We could have an argument, a discussion about, like, well, everyone's logic at bottom it translates to that. But I don't know. It feels wrong in this show. I do agree with what you're saying. Like, it certainly does not feel good. I find it hard to root for Hero because of this.
I can't. I flat out can't at this point. I can't get behind it because he doesn't firstly act in any way that shows this empathy we've been told he's supposedly meant to have. I mean, this is, again, I must stress, after the point which he now knows all of Zero Two's past, or at least the bits he crossed over with her, you know, when they were younger. And again, that pivotal scene that I cannot believe that he doesn't emphasize immensely in his head of seeing her tortured. Honestly, he feels like this. He feels like he's in the super robot version of Archie, you know. He's perpetually got two girls, one to his left, one to his right, and he can have whichever one of them he wants, despite having the personality of a fucking sea anemone. And I can't stand it when he talks like that. Like, he says later on, like, I need you to, so I can fight. And I'm like, alright, Hero, alright, let's really, really break this down. First off, no you don't, because you literally just symbolize that you were still willing to fight by coming out in a training robot. Sure, it wasn't very effective, but that's something. Two. Fight against what? What do you want to fight here? Is it the Klaxosaurs? You barely mention them as a thing that you of interest. Like, Zero Two wants to fight Klaxosaurs? I get. I don't agree with her logic in it, but she's been probably fed a load of bullshit about it. What is he ultimately wanting to fight here? If he had said, the Authority, they'd done this to them, then that would be the connective tissue that would make all this make sense as far as this line goes. But no, he just wants to fight the man, whatever the fuck that, like, I don't even know What is he wanting to fight?
Maybe it would be problematic for him to say, I want to save Zero Two, like, and the whole damsel in distress business. But it feels as bad or worse to me that he's doing all that to relieve himself of some kind of, like, burden. Like, you know what I mean? He's like, I have to tell her something. And Goro's like, you have something you have to tell her, don't you? It's like, the reason should not be framed around him and about him.
No, exactly.
Making him, allowing him to do something, like, at least, you know, frame it around her in some way. Like, it's, like.
I find it very, very, very astounding in the show that we're meant to sympathize with a protagonist who's framing this in a very me kind of way, relative again to something that I cannot keep stressing enough, because the show doesn't do it, so I'm sure I'm going to do it for it instead, of a girl who was, you know, tortured and abused from practically the day she was conceived and treated like an animal. But no, it's all about him. Fuck off. Just fuck off.
I don't like this aspect of the show at the moment. I really, really don't.
I hate this because I read it as an undercurrent of, again, pandering to the demographic. Pandering to
I don't know if it will be worse, pandering to the demographic, or perhaps, like, this is just the sort of limited perspective, that, or this is the actual viewpoint of the writers, you know what I mean? And they kind of are, like, thinking that this is good, that they don't see the issues they're in. I think that it could even be worse than that they see, like, that this is incomplete or incorrect or wrong, but they want to pander.
I don't know.
I think the former might be right.
Maybe it's a mix of the two. It could very well be, but either way, again, like I said before, Pete, you're poisoning. You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. I expect something a lot more, just even a little bit more nuanced than this when it comes to, you know, characters with motivations. I mean, if we want to talk about the love triangle here, again, I'll bring up the perennial example here, Frontier.
It's done now. They've now killed it.
Oh, for sure they have. But the thing is, in the run-up to this, like, what has in each character's, like, motivations been, like, for the love triangle thing? Ichigo because, well, that's just how she's felt since a kid.
Because she's a bitch. Blah.
If I spelled that out, would that be beach? Like, damn it, Doc, you held that really, really long there. That was quite the thing.
That was sarcasm, by the way, for anyone just joining us for the first time, inexplicably.
Yeah, Doc
I love Ichigo.
Doc is hashtag team Ichigo, and to some extent, I'm in agreement. I'm hashtag team 02, although I think that
Me too, that's the thing, is I like both the characters, I just think Ichigo gets an undue amount of shit from both the creators of the show and the fans.
Yeah, and both of them, unfortunately, like I said with the Archie comparison, are wedlocks to a complete waste of oxygen. Like,
it's true.
Yes.
They're, like, fighting over the shit bag.
Yeah. I mean, I think of Alto from Frontier, and sure, he was a bit of a pissy guy a lot of the time, but he had an arc of his own that wasn't dependent on either of them.
He sure did. He had two interesting arcs, one in the movies and the TV show. Both were good.
I mean, as much as I might complain about, you know, like, female characters, you know, relying on the men in shows, like, for their arcs and their development, it does work the other way, folks. Like, it's not strictly just about when female characters get dumped on, although they do get dumped on a lot more narratively than male characters, unfortunately. But, like, Hero's arc here is the dependence on another person rather than himself actualizing. And it's a selfish, covetous way of doing it as well. At least with Alto, like, you know, his decision, like, did he want to be a Kabuki actor or did he want to be a pilot, didn't actually relate in any way to either Cheryl or Ranka. That was just his own personal arc, and the love triangle kind of informed that a little bit and helped push him to certain decisions, but it didn't certainly, you know, define it. This triangle is utterly weak.
Well, when you think about the Gion metaphor, it is sort of a metaphor of codependence.
It is.
Which might not be the healthiest thing in the world.
No, the codependence can be fine if the characters are or if the people involved are contributing relatively equally here. But, again, like I say, Hero's getting 02, it's just because he wants to pilot a Franks. That's not even anything to do with her as a person, really. He can say all he wants that he loves her, but I don't buy it. I mean, this show has actually had characters blurt out, I love you, to each other without really them understanding it. So why should I preclude any understanding on his part here either? Why should I assume that? It just feels like he's saving face because he did a bad thing in the previous episode.
Yeah, it does feel very much like that. Yeah, I feel bad. So I said bad things.
Yeah, oh, and by the way...
like, let me... my behavior to you or whatever has been fucked up or, yeah. or something, you know?
Yeah, I mean... I said at the end of the previous stream before that I really did not want them to be anything more than friends at this point. But not only did they completely go way past that so that, you know, them now being in love with each other and all that again.
They had great sex, apparently. The metaphor for it, anyway.
But not only have they done that, this is the episode immediately after it. Like, when Branka disappeared, and when Cheryl disappeared, and when they had their stiffs, their fallouts with Alto or each other, they lasted a while. They didn't
This is a big beef I have with this episode, too.
I mean, going back to our previous episode, like, myself and Doc, we had very strong disagreements about how we felt about the drama in it. Like, I did not care for the drama at all. I thought it was manufactured melodrama. But that's just my opinion. That's not me saying...
It was
saying...
real good.
Fair enough. But here's the thing, right? Whatever side of the debate you might fall on as to whether or not the drama in episode 14 was good, I don't think there's any real debate in the fact they should have laid it, you know, last a bit longer than simply two-thirds of another episode.
Yeah. The whole fucking team who... What appears to be a matter of hours earlier had the shit kicked out of them by 02 was like basically planning the hookup of Hero and 02. All is forgiven, mates. Yes, like let's let her back into our lives. This person now that almost as much as what you're talking about, like the time for the mains to figure things out. That whole thing bothered me a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, why the fuck is the team so, like, into getting them back together? I'm not, like, anti being forgiving or understanding. I just don't see what new information that they have gained, how have they changed their perspective? What have they learned about
if
Zero
Hero
that
had
mitigated
told
the circumstances, you know?
When you said that, I just thought he had literally told them.
I mean, as far as we know, she kicked the shit out of him, and she left. And that's it. That's all that happened. It's as far as they know, like, she's revealed her true monstrous nature, and nothing else. And yet, they're like, Hero, we see you, buddy. We see you in pain. And
we don't mind it when
you're back with 02, because it's so beautiful.
Hero,
it's
bro.
It's like, what the fuck?
Bro, we don't mind if you stick your dick in crazy. I said at the end of the previous episode that I feared that you could take a reading away from this whole, how this would pan out, that, oh, you could do and say terrible shit to people and then it's just done. Like, I'm not going to argue, like, about the, you know, the gravity of each person's crimes in this, but the thing is, right, it's just over and done. This is a complicated thing for them both.
Yeah.
Like, this is relating to her, you know...
Thank you.
Who she is as a living being, not just a personality thing here. This is, like, arguably some sort of physical, like, you know, deformity or disability that she has. In fact, you know what it's just reminding me of all the random things in the world that you never would have thought it would remind you of? Do you remember Rogue from the X-Men?
Indeed.
Can't touch anyone because it kills him.
Mm-hmm.
They actually got genuine drama out of that. Like, I'm thinking of, in context of the actual animated series here. And the films as well.
Had me a boyfriend when I was 14. I really liked him, so I kissed him. Poor boy was in a coma for 3 days.
The kiss of death, you might say. So, you know, maybe they might want to discuss and explore that. But no, this show is not interested in exploring any of the intrapersonal stuff. Indeed, when this episode is over... The drama that we mentioned is now concluded leaves only, you know, the mystery of the Grand Crevasse as the narrative push that I've discussed before as a thing driving you on to the next one. And I'm very sorry to say trick or day one, but if you want to try and keep, you know, pulling this magic trick of throwing words and, you know, mystery in front of me, then, well, no. You can do better. You have done better. I watched Kill la Kill, and every episode made me immediately want to jump into the next one. Like, I didn't want to wait. I didn't wait for most of it. The only thing that really stopped me was just other tasks that I had to do. Whereas, I'm in no rush to see Frank 16. What the fuck could possibly happen next that could hold my interest?
Partner swap! The third edition! Oh boy.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
Hey, come on down, everybody, and get ready to change your mecha partners for the better.
But there is indeed a partner swap this, so I just want to quickly lead in by saying that Hero takes the time to revisit Zero-Two's room, which I'm fairly confident he did in the previous episode.
He sure did.
He even took the time to look at the mirror, which he also did in the previous episode, so... Yeah.
And he's like, that's just so funny. Like, when he's like, what were you trying to tell me?
Like, have what you is seen the walls?
What is he talking about?
Have you seen the walls that are scratched up to fuck, the blood that's everywhere, the broke...
Is he referring to, like, her attempted explanation for her behavior? Or what? What is he even talking about? I mean, if so, then it seemed like, well, it was kind of straightforward, but you were mad, and you ripped her, and that was that. It's no mystery what she was trying to tell you. I don't really get this part.
It's because Hero's an idiot.
Misstep.
He's a fucking idiot. I don't even get why they put this scene back in, because there's a lot to cram into this episode, and there's a bit later on. All that discussion aside that we've gone on about here, let's actually talk more about the events of the episode. So after Hero makes his, you know, detour to a scene he's already been in a previous episode, like, he travelled back in time, it wasn't a different thing, it was just him reliving the events of episode 14 again. He then decides, okay, I'm going to actually use a previously established plot point, which for this show is a really rare thing. Like, that's the shiny Pokemon moment right there. But what Hero decides to do is that, okay, he can't fight in a Franks, but by God damn, is he going to fight in a training unit with a crappy little aura as a weapon? And he makes it all of one block before getting pancakes into the ground, which really made me chuckle. By the way, this training robot, no seatbelt, no airbag, no safety features. How he doesn't die when he crashes against the wall. Like, he's bleeding all over the show. So how he's not dead is beyond me. I mean, you can't even, like, you know, go 30 in a car with a seatbelt without severely injuring yourself if you crash. So this dinky little piece of shit training robot, like, what the fuck? I don't know.
I thought he was going to do some, like, sick tricks. At one point he like spins, like does a like a, almost a flat spin, or you
corkscrew.
Know is flying through the air and just like, oh well, this could be a fun part of the show. But it ended up not, at least I didn't think it was animated very well. Sometimes my eye for this sort of stuff, it doesn't jibe with what other people think, but I didn't really care for the way the whole thing was animated. It looked a bit shoddy to me. And yeah, like you said, it ends up kind of petering out, and it looked like he crippled himself, because at one point he's like pulling himself along by his arms for a bit, and he's all bloodied up, but it turns out he's fine. You know, it's anime Jesus, as we've called him before, is A-okay.
He's got the resilience of Bugs Bunny.
He just, it's like he was a wrestler who bladed, you know, he had to bleed the hard way, and it was just for effect, but he's fine.
Yeah, exactly. This, again, also would have been a really nice point for him to show that he's sorrifying by having blue blood, but, well, you know, that's never going to happen. That's never going to happen.
Have we talked about the fact that he's holding, like, an oar?
Yeah.
Or did you call it the T-Stir?
The T-Stir, yes. We mentioned that.
What? What even...
What does he plan to do with it? Like...
I mean, what was even the training... Like, what... What did you do in the training robot or the maintenance robot or whatever it is? Like, what did
hit
you...
Hit targets?
Did you clash oars together?
No, they did, because they had the training sequence with in one of the earlier episodes with Zarame. So, I don't know why he brought that, though, and why he couldn't have had some sort of actual weapon, but who the fuck knows? I mean, the fact that the robot, like, is even in the same place as the Franks now just makes me again question why they had to build robots. Fuck it, whatever, who cares? Moving on. Like, again, this is another thing that I just don't think I should spend too much time thinking about.
Yeah, and it's here in the episode that a lot of things start to happen really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We've mentioned, broadly speaking, how the pace feels off this episode, and we'll go through the specifics now. Goro suddenly takes control,
or stops the robot from moving, stops Delphinium the Franks and says, "Nope, I can't bear to see Hiro like this anymore. Ichigo, I know you're going to be mean and yell at him, you big meanie. How dare you? Mm. But we're gonna pick him up here and take him to 02.
Except we're not.
You have something to say, don't you? Oh. It's a, you know, because you have to achieve your hero's quest. So I will get out of the robot
in a battle zone
and let you pilot with her a move that we have seen not work before. And look, I understand, okay, that this is a super robot show, and that, you know, kick logic to the curb, you know, hot-blooded pilots win the day, manliness, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, this just, it feels incredibly like they were kind of written into a corner and they just did this.
No, they weren't. They were not written into a corner.
It does not feel good. So Ichigo and Hiro are able to sync up and pilot. Because they both want the same thing.
I have a theory. Like,
apparently,
on this.
Apparently, they didn't before when they tried it.
I have an idea of how this works, or at least I think I do. But it might have helped the show to explain this. So, okay, it's been established now that ever since Hiro drank 02's blood, his yellow blood cell count has been declining. Whatever the fuck that is.
That's right. Yeah, he's become useless as a pilot. Yeah.
So what happens when people pilot with 02, though, is that their yellow blood cell count goes up. Now, if you're a regular person and not like Hiro, then you would probably... That's how you die.
So that's why Mitsuru was only injured and not killed.
Well, yeah.
Even though she pushed him really hard.
Yeah. So essentially, his blood still got all of the yellow blood cells floating around because he's piloted with 02 a lot, and that's why he now can suddenly connect.
This is a good theory. This makes sense.
Although, ironically, you know what that means? If ever there wanted to be optimal piloting, if 02 came back, it means he would have to alternate between Ichigo and 02. The Archie thing again, Betty and Veronica. Fucking really.
Well, okay. Well, but why is he now able to pilot with Ichigo?
Because again, he's just got the old blood cells now that allow him to pilot. It would have worked with any of the women.
Well, how did he get?
Because again, 02 caused him to. That's what happens when you pilot with 02. She causes yellow blood cells to rise. And
did they not pilot together before he failed with Ichigo? Before
no,
I think they did.
No, never.
You know, the first episode they pilot together. Remember, he goes in there the first episode with 02.
No. It's in the mech. Yes, that's right. Okay, that doesn't make sense. I confess. Maybe. All right. Who the fuck knows? It's stupid. I wasn't accurate with the explanation I was giving anyway, because they don't go into it. And here's the thing, folks, right? First off, the whole point is to get Hiro to 02, right? When she's in Strelizia's tiger form. I have a question about this. Why do they need to have Hiro pilot with Ichigo anyway, when Goro could just do that and he can just taxi inside the cockpit?
Yeah.
Or for that matter...
Or outside.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like that's happened before, where we had a Franks pilot carried in the palm of another... Oh, shit, right, yes, we did. Because Ichigo got piloted into the fucking Cthulhu saw in the palm of Strelizia. So, again, that's already happened. Two, this is really stupid, because what was Goro going to do if the other Franksis couldn't come and pick him up? Because he does get picked up.
I know.
Like, at least when, again, in Frontier, when Michiru, like, jumped out of his fighter, he at least had an environment suit and a rifle with him. Or was it Gillian, the guy who died in the first episode? At least he had a token means of resistance. Garo's just stood there like he's about to start hitchhiking. He's going to hold his fucking thumb out and just wait for someone to come and, you know, come and pick him up. I mean, and then lastly, let's say that Hiro is inside Strelizia at this point and can't actually, you know, get 02 to like back for whatever reason. Like, just roll this hypothetically. What the fuck is?
Or maybe he can't. He can't even start to fin him up. That's the fucking bullshit right there. Like, why the fuck do they like? It just seems such a bad plan.
Yeah, because Ichigo then would be able to pilot Delphinium because she doesn't have anyone with her. At least while Hiro's actually in Strelizia, if Goro's still there piloting, he could defend them.
And these are the kinds of things that in terms of the techno cancer, right? I would defend the logic of what that one off thing as like super robot logic that we've sort of we're overcoming this obstacle, metaphorically speaking, like with, you know, hard work and guts or hot blood or togetherness or whatever. But like, I just feel like too many inconsistencies and contradictions are piled on top of each other here that it's just, it weighs down the show's ability to, you know, Houdini out of this with that method. I just don't, there's just too much happening that is unexplained and we've been shown doesn't work.
Yeah. On top of that, the whole outcome of this is, apart from just conveying Hiro to Strelizia, is that because he and Ichigo merge their consciousnesses...
That's the reason. I was going to say that, what you're about to say, I feel like is the reason they did this.
Yeah, as opposed to talking. How many times? How many fucking times have I said in this stream of four, from the very first episode to the last, that this show would be not only make more sense, but also be far more engaging if characters actually talk shit out? I've heard the people say they're kids. Guess what? I've seen plenty of media where they have kids of this age who do talk shit out. Persona 4, Persona 5, Persona 3. Or in anime, Scum's Wish. Scum's Wish was actually dealing with this material, you know, the whole sexually charged adolescent thing, so much better. And that didn't need giant robots to keep my attention. Because characters admitted, you know, that they were going through some shitty stuff and they were doing shitty things.
Although, pause.
Pause.
Scum's Wish with giant robots.
Mmm.
Pretty good.
I would be...
Pretty good.
I would be entirely on board with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, time to...
Get on that.
Time to headcanon my way out of this, right? So, but here's the thing also about this memory thing, like... Not only is it just completely stupid relative to the very easy task of just, well, relatively speaking, just talking. Do you want to know what Ichigo learns from this memory merge?
That he's really into Zero Two. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. Now I'm gonna.
That's all we're shown.
That's all we're shown.
I bet people, to play devil's advocate, I bet people will say, "Well, those images are just representative for the whole body of his memory." But it's still
that's pretty damning then.
That may or may not be the case, but like, if they wanted to do that, they should have picked a better representative series of examples. They were all from the same, they're all the same kind of memory from the same time period.
Yeah, the recent past.
I feel like we're only meant to learn, you know, what we see.
Yeah.
And nothing more.
Yeah. And here's the thing, right? I've banged on so many times about learning about Zero Two's past. Something I need to really stress here is that Zero Two's past is relevant to every single person in that team because it's relevant to their own lives and what the government and Ape are doing. It's not just about her. Like,
I'm sorry, Ape.
I know.
It's hard to take seriously.
It is. It absolutely is. But like,
and be mad about a group called Ape.
Yeah. I mean, if Zero Two had just been abused by a single bad person in the, you know, garden and the rest of the garden staff, generally speaking, cared and all that, like, I'm not trying to diminish what's happened to her. But I would understand why it might not feel quite so relevant on many levels. It would just be relevant on an emotional, you know, sympathetic level. But I can't stress enough how much that this information really should be divulged but to them some way, so that way it can actually, you know, change their worldview. And the fact that Ichigo stills and learns, like, I'm genuinely convinced at this point not one of them will find out about Zero Two's past.
It wouldn't shock me.
It would, and if it doesn't, like, I can't fucking believe they wouldn't do that just because it's... There's potential for good drama there. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. It's not even about necessarily me complaining about the logic of it. Like, you know, about how why Hiro doesn't even voice the, you know, idea of not telling them. There's potential for good drama from this. But they don't want to do it because the writers are high? What the fuck? I don't know.
They do not like the talking. I do confess that it's starting to, it just flat does undercut a lot of the drama that these kids never have any conversations with each other about this shit when they so easily could.
Yeah.
They easily could.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So they, the magic happens and Hiro and Ichigo are able to link up and she receives all the memory about Zero Two and how much he loves him. He loves her. And it just feels, God, it feels like them dumping on Ichigo. It feels like a fan broke into the studio and was like, let me just show you, girl. You're trying to get my boy here. But guess what? He loves Zero Two. And I'm going to write it into the story so that you can feel how much it is. And you will just be defeated in your pursuit of the perfect male specimen. So fuck you, Ichigo. And she is like cries because she knows.
That's the moment of giving up then, yeah.
They're destined to be together and shit, which is fine. I'm fine. The Zero Two hero relationship is not... Sure, do it. But man, like, it just feels like Ichigo, fuck you, girl. And then so she takes him over, and the only time they're able to pilot successfully, you know, has her weeping and feeling sad and defeated, which is the experience we all have when syncing up with Hiro, I think.
Mine was, well...
I cried.
Franxes don't come equipped with sick bags, but they should do.
So she buses him over to Zero Two. First, they get in a fight.
Yep.
Which is kind of neat, but like... I mean, it's like we wanted it to happen, but it was really underwhelming. I can't decide if we don't really want the things we want from this show, or...
We want the things we want them. Just not as delivered.
Like the show... Yeah, if the show is just not holding up its end of the bargain.
Yeah, the thing about me wanting a Delphinium Strelizia fight is, when I say that, what I really mean is I wanted a Zero Two Ichigo fight.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not a fight because Zero Two is not in her possession of her own faculties.
No, she's like writing in meme speak on the fucking screen.
Oh, what the fuck was wrong with that?
That was silly.
What is she playing? Is that what she's doing? She's not piloting Strelizia, but she's playing Fortnite. What the fuck? I mean, Leet Speak even
look
then,
look at
like,
my Leet skills.
Leet Speak even then was like from the early 2000s. So even when it's doing this, it still feels old fashioned. God damn it. But like, when I think again, I'm sorry to keep bringing up this particular franchise, folks, but it's such a textbook long list of comparison points that it almost feels like the counterpoint to this show that we're watching. But let's talk about Macross Plus and Golden Dyson. You know, when they're having a dogfight, it's just basically they're brawling. Like, it would be the exact same thing if they were fighting on the ground. Like, punching the shit out of each other. But they were fighting over their, funnily enough, affection for a woman and their shared past and how that broke them. And that was interesting to watch because there was interplay between the characters. But this is so very one way here. It's just wasted. Like, Ichigo, you know, is angry that it's all about Zero Two. And I'm like, okay, that's not an entirely unreasonable thing for you personally to feel. I mind you, I again stress that maybe it would have helped if she'd known the info about this point, because when it is, like, there's a very good reason it's all about Zero Two, let's put it that way. But, like, we don't have anything back from Zero Two, because she's not in the state of it, so it's just kind of wasted. It's not even really a fight, because Strelitzy is just getting Tiger Form, just stood there for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of clash and... Delphinium gets to slap Strelizia in the face.
Yeah.
And then get its helmet knocked off and look like a Splatoon character.
Not even knocked off. The helmet is flat out destroyed. It shatters into pieces. By the way, about 2 minutes later...
I have a spare right here.
Yeah, about 2 minutes later, Delphinium's hat is back. That's
some Bugs Bunny shit. The hat should just keep getting destroyed and reappearing. Pulling them out of nothing.
What was there, like a giant mech hat store in the district they're in? Is that where Delphinium got it from? This is amateur hour shit here. Come on. I mean, I know this is a minor thing.
It's not a big deal though, it's just a hat.
It's not a big deal, but this is like, normally I praise Franks for its technical stuff, but you said before about the animation being sloppy on the fucking training robot. And this is just like, these scenes are 2 minutes apart.
It's cool that Ichigo gets to vent here. I mean, that's why the fight needed to happen. I feel like on paper, the result is as it should be, right? I mean, conceptually, Ichigo needs to get in blows on Zero Two and uncork and fully vent and express all her pent-up frustration at how things have gone, how she's been treated by Zero Two, and how, you know, the love of her life won't return her affection and how she feels Zero Two is dangerous, all this stuff. And she kind of gets to do it, but it's just not, like you said, it's just not satisfying. And ultimately, you know, it fizzles out before it has a chance to start. I feel like this should have lasted half an episode.
Right. It should have happened when Zero Two was in her own mind, so we could have some actual character into play.
Yes, that would have been good.
Dice and Gold were shouting shit at each other through the comms.
Yes.
I mean, even in film, like, you know, Rocky and Ivan, like, or Rocky and Apollo, you know, they have bants with each other. But there's nothing here. Ichigo might as well be screaming at the TV for all it's worth.
Well, now you've got me wanting to go watch Megalobox, so thanks for that.
I'm doing you a favor.
So, what happens next? Delphinium overpowers Strelizia, or at least gets to say the words like, hey, I'm sending you Hero, and so Strelizia doesn't resist. And Hero crosses over into the cockpit with Zero Two looking, you know, like a crazy-eyed deer.
Just something I want to say about this. I said before about the whole thing about Zero Two devouring, you know, the pilots. If they really wanted to have, like, a moment of, you know, hesitation for Hero here, which reminds him of Zero Two's nature, but also gives him cause to, you know, get past it, the last pilot she was with should have still been in the cockpit. And then he would have forcibly had to remove it. Like, take him over for him just to see it and then have him go, ugh. Like, but no, she's more than that. This is not her fault. I mean, that also would imply then, you know, that they didn't take the time to recall Strelizia somehow and take the pilot out, which seems implausible. I don't know. It would have been a nice addition, I mean, you know, just throw it out there.
Well, and so he grabs her antlers and apologizes / confess. I mean, he talks to her, and then she comes around and says, oh no, don't look at me. I don't want you to see me like this. And starts apologizing, saying, I used you, I called you fodder. And at least he has the good decency to say, I called you a monster, and he apologizes for that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're weeping and hugging, and they love each other, and they're back together. Hooray.
Within the space of an episode, folks, it's just that quick. I mean, Jesus Christ, if the English dub, right, I hope Zero Two's Australian, because she literally is a fucking boomerang. Threw her out, came right back.
Last episode, her being called a monster was clearly affected her a lot, and yeah, I mean, she's very easily forgiven him here. Although, you know, I mean, it could be because, look, she's thinking I did terrible things or said terrible things too. But, and if you're really cynical, you might think that the production staff just doesn't want to deal with bullshit and wanted to bury this hatchet as quickly as possible.
Hmm.
That's a theory you could have, I suppose. You know, in some ways it is nice to see, and it's affecting, you know, because these kids are just crying their eyes out, and Zero Two especially, I feel for here.
Mm-hmm.
But then they link up and have hot sex, because the mecha transforms and
sexual healing. You know what you said before, by the way, something I just want to say as a quick aside. You mentioned, I think, Monogatari.
Mm-hmm.
Zero Two would be so much better off if she was a Monogatari character.
Mm.
Imagine her in Araragi. That would be so much better than this shit that we've got to deal with here. One thing we need to rewind to very quickly, that's a plot point that's going to come back later. In Destroy World, the Klaxosaurs and cracking open its, you know, gumball machine-like secret prize center.
Oh, I was going to get to that. That's coming up next. Oh, just to finish this off, there, the mecha does transform, right, in a way. It recolors and gets all of its former power back. It's sort of bipedal humanoid form, flying through, just impaling everything with its spear. And again, they are calling out each other's names because it feels so good to hook back up. And they're laughing and crying and laughing. And they destroy the Jawa vehicle, or they think they have, right? A skeleton is left over with, as you said, a lot of gumballs inside.
It's all right. They'll blame it on sand people later anyway.
And
So I have in my notes, all caps, humans in the K-Eggs.
Oh, God. The gumball machines, yeah. The little secret prizes. I'm not even going to bother speculate about this.
What's the... We need to be given more before we can even start to form connections, I think.
Yeah. I'm not even to bother, because it's just an intermission moment of, oh, what could this mean? And I'm like, what, like everything else you pretended what it could mean?
Well, like, Werner Franks will teach you what it is, you know?
No thanks. I'm not taking lessons of any kind from Dr. Franks. I'm not even sure he's a real doctor.
Oh, for sure. The Online University of Phoenix, this is where my degree comes from. You doubt this? Credentials?
Frank's degree is as legitimate as Dr. Nick Riviera's. That makes me just wish that he came in and said, "Hi, everybody!" That'd be good. I'd be okay with that. Like, okay, maybe it turns out that, you know, the Klaxosaurs are actually robots piloted by humans or whatever. I don't care, because all the mystery stuff this show has delivered up till this point has not actually meant anything in the long run, either for the world or for the characters. The techno cancer didn't matter. Mitsuru stuff didn't matter. It just, like, I have no incentive to believe this will actually be meaningful or surely shocking. Well, they weren't our enemy all along? Never. Not to mention it also doesn't make sense because the Klaxosaurs are supposedly meant to be creatures because they have blood and DNA, but they have human... Whatever. Fuck it. Don't care.
This is the point where we are told that ingesting her blood messed up Hero's piloting capabilities, because I guess we get a little bit of a look inside Zero Two's head, which is not enough, but it's something. We found out that she never forgot, and I guess the only reason we get this look is because Hero is looking in there, so always got to be from that male perspective, folks.
They actually outright state they could clean out the entirety of Zero Two's memories. Like, they were completely able to brain wipe Hero.
They tried, though, like, because the guy was like, look, we can't, and it's going to hurt her if we try again. And Franks is like, fucking do it. And so...
Didn't work, obviously.
My assumption is, yeah, they tried and, you know, her pain be damned, but she was able to, by injuring herself and licking her own blood, get back the memories of that day. And here's the really galling thing I feel. Here's the one... Look, I'm willing to swallow a lot of bullshit in anime in general, and super robot shows in particular. But the fact that she learned to speak from analyzing her memories of her and Hero is just beyond the pale for me. In terms of, I just had to, like, pause it and just look to the heavens. Really?
I don't think she learned the entirety of her language from that. I think that it was a start.
But still. The fact that she was all like, the first thing I learned is how he referred to himself as I. And then I learned the word darling. And then all these other... Just like, oh my God. I mean...
Are you more annoyed about the fact that it was him prompting her education?
No. Just that... I think just that she advanced so far in human language, she was a zero, again, after contact with humans and lessons, presumably, and hearing all kinds of...
We don't get enough info by Amelia.
Well, we've heard... Well, a lot of people have spoken to her, and...
That's true, actually, yeah, you're right.
And, even a person was kind to her to some degree in the beginning. At least they weren't abusing her initially. You know, they gave her books and stuff. She didn't know what to do with them, but...
Yeah, that's right. Why is this the first time she started learning words? She must have picked up something before then.
Yeah, and just... I mean, of course it had to be Hero, because, like, you know, he's the special one here. But it just really seemed beyond the bounds of what I was willing to accept in the show for me.
Actually, come to think of it, it's not even been explained yet how she changed from the impish form she was in to a more human form.
No, yeah.
How has that happened? I mean, not to mention that, like, her blood we've seen previously as an adult is red, not blue.
Mm-hmm.
So, what the, like, when did this happen? Like, did Franks allow it to happen? why would he allow it to happen? Because conceivably it would make her abilities... And on top of that, all nitpicky stuff aside, you could have had some interesting drama if she looks like an adult version of herself, like she does now, just red with bigger horns, mm-hmm. you know, and blue blood. Like, really make her look like an outsider, rather than just manic pixie dream girl with pink hair, like, and white, you know, and otherwise looking relatively normal.
It makes you wonder if they started out this plan from the beginning. I wonder.
Who the fuck knows?
And then the nines are like, nines out, and then they proceed to blow up the communion wafer from all four sides.
While this is happening, the episode's credits are playing over it.
Right.
I found this incredibly distracting.
I know. Me too.
I mean, there are times, like what I've said before, like, you should drop the OP if you've got something going on that's worth looking
Which
at.
Which they did here, and that as well.
They've done that. And when they had episode one, when they had the credits playing over that, it was calm. Like, it was after the battle. But there's a lot of movement, a lot of activity going on here, and there's also the subtitles. It's just a confusing mess. I could barely keep track of what was going on because of it. Mm-hmm. And it's not like they had scenes they could have cut out, like Hiro going to Zero Two's room to make time for the actual credits. So, bit of a fuck-up there, in my opinion.
Well, this scene, I almost forgave it just because it felt like, here is, like, some Gainax trigger, like, classic stuff where you have, again, what is evocative to me of a communion wafer symbol here getting, you know, blown up, like, exploding into light, which shoots through the atmosphere and pulls back all the gloom and the gray and the kind of morose atmosphere of the post-apocalypse of the world to reveal a blue, blue sky that everyone gets to look up at. And I'm like, that's some really nice imagery and a nice kind of super robot spectacly thing that I haven't seen so far in the show. And I really liked that sequence a lot.
Yeah, it looked good. It's just that, well, all I had was the names of, like, a ton of Japanese symbols over it to just...
The robo bishops are back, and they say, "The door to the grand crevasse is open." And, then we see the things inside the skeleton, right? At that point, don't we? The eggs?
Well, there's the giant core. The eggs, the actual human that Miku comments on is seen earlier. But right. It's implied at this point that Klaxxor cores basically contain a nice, you know, prepackaged human. Foil wraps and everything, you know, to keep it fresh.
Yeah, well, it looks like there's a bunch of those balls inside the skeleton of the Jawa tank.
Collects them all.
Yes. And so Alpha, I guess, is ready to go because he feels like, well, something's going to happen. And then something does happen.
Talk to the hand!
The Smash Brothers final boss appears. The Hasbro hand. A giant baby hand.
The shadow staple marshmallow man.
Rises from the earth.
No, really, like, that's literally how comical this hand looks. I honestly just wish there was, like, you know, a Ray quote from Ghostbusters for this. Because it didn't look until it's like, my toy! You smashed my toy! Give it back! And it drags it away.
Yeah.
And
slowly, like, falls down and crushes, and of course no one dies from this. But it pulls away the remains of the
plantation,
the Klaxxor. Oh, and the plantation. That's correct.
Everything's wrecked except the garden that, you know, the schoolhouse they lived in. Like, it literally misses all of the actual vital shit. So
yeah.
Who cares?
So we're left with, you know, we got the nines, we got Squad 13. Strelizia back at full fighting force. The Grand Crevasse, the door to it's been open. Ring Horny, still in production, nearing completion. And a giant baby hand. This is where we are. And all the personal drama has been largely shelved. It's been resolved. There's things they could reopen, I suppose, but I think that they wanted to get that out of the way to focus these last 8 or 9 episodes on...
8 or 9? Fuck me.
Focusing on the actually moving forward the state of the world, getting us some resolution as far as that goes. And to be honest with you, like, I started out, of course, in the beginning of this show interested in it, but it seems like, you know, they didn't really have too many ideas or not a lot happened, and I'm frankly much less interested in that stuff now and sad that the character drama that I thought was going to carry us for a few episodes is now over.
I have nothing to add. Like, apart from the, like I've said before, we're now going into the next episode with nothing really, at least to me, that appeals or drives the audience's interest. So what if a giant hand, you know, rises out from the earth?
A big grabs, baby. You know, the big baby from Spirited Away is hidden within the earth.
Like, what the fuck does that matter? I don't have any, like, the most we get as far as the Klaxosaurs are concerned is the fact there might be humans in them. But that doesn't mean anything. Are they actual humans? Are they replicas of humans?
Is that what the backup is? You get backed up into a Klaxosaur egg?
The Robo-Bishops say, like, you know, that humanity's liberation is at hand. But what does that mean? Like, they obviously know what's going... They know what's going on.
Yeah, they do say as well when they sacrifice the one plantation that, like, you know, let's liberate them from their bodies instead of they could die or whatever. They take that as a positive. So hopefully they'll tie it, the show will tie that stuff together soon.
Yeah, right. You can speculate about a show all you want. You can speculate about where it might be going. But like with the Lost comparison I made a couple of times before, it needs to give us something. It can't survive on mystery alone. None of this mystery stuff is even really stuff that the characters care about. Zorame had the closest insight possible, really, with, you know, him meeting an adult. That hasn't meant anything. Even, like, the most that it's meant is that we saw her, that lady again this episode. Did it matter that she was there? No. She was just there as a person we remember. Because, I don't know, maybe it's meant to finally bring home the human factor? But it's not like anything happens to her in particular, so that was pointless. Okay, let me ask you a question then, Doc. Let's go back to something that I've asked you before about this show. What is Darling in the Franxx meant to be about?
It is...
I'm sorry to ask you that, because I know it's going to be a hard answer.
Well, it is a super robot show about some kids conscripted. It did sort of hastily thrown together dystopic world. They're conscripted to fight these beasts, to save humanity. And there are trappings of flower imagery and sexual lingo that don't ultimately add up to much.
And what is it about thematically?
Oh.
It's not about the sexual stuff, because that's barely a footnote.
Yeah.
I mean, they've not even explained it. Like, it's not like, for example...
It's really hard to pick something out that is not the plot.
Yeah. It's certainly not about the sex stuff or the idea of adolescence or anything or what it means to be an adult, even though it could have been. It's not about, you know, what it means to be human, because we don't get any real detailed discussions of that.
No.
Or anything.
It's not about, like, well, this would tie into what it means to be human, but it's not like a kind of typical dystopic exploration of power or corruption or, you know, the state controlling our lives or anything like that.
Yeah.
Doesn't go there. Yeah, thematically, it's hard to say. I mean, I guess, like, you could lean on the Geon metaphor, but there's so much that happens in the show that doesn't really enforce that or underscore it, at least in my mind, a good or healthy way.
No.
And there's so much that doesn't have to do anything with it at all.
Nope. I don't know. I'm 15 episodes out of 24 in
Men
saying...
Men and women need each other. Or something.
Maybe. Possibly. I don't know. 15 episodes out of 24 into this show. I can't conclusively tell you what this show is meant to be about thematically. Or even, I can't even tell you that it's got any reasonable payoff to anything that it's delved into so far. I mean, say what you will, again, about, you know, 0-2 in Heroes Fallout, whether you thought, like me, it was, you know, a really stupid thing, or if you thought it was genuinely compelling drama, both of which are valid arguments, dealt with in an episode. Done. That's it. Whatever. Long-term consequences and shifting relationships and status quos? Nah. I mean, the only thing that's really happened about that has been, you know, the partner swap with Mitsuru and Futoshi. Have we seen anything more?
Oh, did somebody mention partner swap? Well, let me come down here.
I certainly did.
Oh yeah, it's time. Spin that wheel, get a new partner to drive you home tonight in your very own Franks.
Man, can you imagine what it'd be like when he goes to parties driving Franks and you all drop your keys in? You know, in that little thing? You're all going on with different people tonight.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Let's get it started.
So
spin the wheel. Yeah, I mean, we've gotten some cool characters, like a couple, and we've gotten a couple of intriguing ones that could be more. But like, what are they in service of? Like you said, what's the thrust of the show?
Yeah. I mean,
I'm not sure, man.
I mean,
be honest with you.
By this point in Kill la Kill, I'm fairly convinced that A, we now know who Ragu and Haruni we are, and that they're bad, and what their agenda is. We know that Satsuki's got her own agenda. We've got that figured out. We've had a couple of fights. Character relationships have changed around. Nudist speech has become a thing. Ryuko loses and regains Senketsu by this point. Like, a lot happens, and a lot of things change and characters change. Like, that's the key thing about, like, Kill la Kill, is that in the end, although they still are very different people and are very much, you know, aggressive towards each other, or at least antagonistic, they rub each other the wrong way. Like, the relationship between Ryuko and Satsuki changes. You know, they come to an understanding. Nothing really has changed in this show as far as character relationships go. It's just kind of gone in circles. Okay, now Hero and 0-2, like, you know, are a problem couple, and now they're fine. Like going from, like, you know, to episode 5 and episode 6, where Hero's being killed by her, but no, he's fine again. And then we go into, you know, the downtime, and then, no, she tries to kill him again, and now he's back and fine again. Like, nothing has really changed from the first time they got, like, properly got together. I mean, Kokoro swapping with, you know, Mitsuru, has that meant anything since then? Since that was dealt with? No. They paid it lip service in episode 12? But that's it. Nothing. It doesn't matter. Like, if I had watched this without the context of the previous episodes, I wouldn't have known that they'd ever swapped in the first place. I thought it had always been that way.
That's what a successful partner swap looks like.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, never swapped in the first place.
Indeed.
Until you're ready to swap again. And when you are, that's when you give me a call, and we'll spin that wheel.
Yeah. So, I'll just end on one final thing I want to say about this episode that feels like a microcosm of the show's writing and just how they can't seem to offer any sort of real complexity. The kids, like, all see Hero off when they go out to battle. And Futoshi says...
We haven't talked about this.
Yeah, Futoshi says to Hero as he walks past him and puts down his shoulder, "Please don't go eating my food, Hero."
I mean, what is this? Is this like a summer comedy?
Is this Saturday morning cartoon TV in a show that doesn't want to be treated that way? I get it. I really do. Futoshi likes his food. I like my food as well. Do you know what? I don't bang on about fucking every 5 fucking minutes. And maybe the writers shouldn't either. Maybe they should have given that moment the gravity it deserved. But that's the thing about this show in a nutshell. We'll play it simply. We'll play it plainly. And we'll not give anything the dignity or the time it deserves to truly have moments of humanity. So, hey, there we go. Nothing you haven't heard from me before, folks. But once again, fuck it. This show's dumb. It's a pissed away load of potential. Just down the fucking drain, circling the rim. Fuck. Just no.
So that's a 3 out of 5 for you then.
2.5. I'm going with the same. I'm giving this one 2.5 Jawas out of 5. I mean,
okay.
It was again a nice looking battle, but But once I actually started paying attention to what people were saying and why they were doing what they were doing, everything just went out the window. This would have been so much better as a silent movie, or if they just cut out the dialogue.
I bet that Trigger could make a couple of really cool compilation movies that look better and, hell, just redo the fucking story.
Yeah.
I'd be on board. I'm gonna give this 3 Protocol 32s out of 5.
So you're giving it 96, Protocol 96.
Correct.
Man, I don't even want... Is Protocol 96 where they go get pizza? I really want them to imagine that all the protocols they've got, like, they've got some really, like, deadly, like, world-ending shit. Like, Protocol 44 is ordering a nuclear strike, but Protocol 45 is, you know, putting a hot pocket in the microwave.
Exactly,
yes. On the list, and you fucks it up.
Yeah, scroll one up and one down is like, you know, exit the building because fumigation is happening this afternoon. I'll give it 3 based on the stronger battle sequences and some of the imagery I mentioned. 02, good things happening to her are well, arguably good things that she wants to happen, and her being treated nice is good, but there's a lot of dumb shit, annoying stuff. Ichigo really just got the short end of the stick again. And so a couple points down for me. Overall, fairly enjoyable episode, despite my quibbles. But I do, at this point, I feel like I'm grading on a curve for Frank's, just because it's sort of my enjoyment relative to how I've enjoyed a lot of the rest of this show, and my enjoyment based on kind of what the characters that I'm rooting for are going through. When I step back, and this is part of what you were getting at with your question, what is this show about? When I step back and look at the bigger picture of the show, it's going to have a far lower ranking in my mind, lower scores, lower rating, I guess, than individual moments and episodes, just because what are those in service of? What are they leading up to? What was the payoff of those? How did those contextualize with what else happened? I mean, so far, there's not a lot of that stuff. And I feel like in some ways, it's hard for me to look at the big picture of the show. I get being choked by the being in the weeds of individual episodes. But yeah, I don't think it's going to fare very well when looked at as a whole. So that's where that's me with the show. Shadan, if people would like to engage you in more conversation about the show, where can they find you on the internet?
Yeah, they can find me at Shaden1010 on Twitter. Come one, come all.
Very good. You can find me at The Subtle Doctor on Twitter for the same. You can find our podcast on SoundCloud. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts. You can find The Stream of Thought in their entirety on YouTube. If you are a YouTube subscriber or just a viewer, thank you. You may see some shorter videos focused on anime discussions of a different variety. Not currently airing stuff. Those are part of our normal podcast episodes. So Stream of Thought that we do week to week is kind of its own thing. The Watery Desho episodes proper tend to be much longer and more in-depth and cover an entire show. And the sort of clipped segments of those you hear on YouTube. If you want to hear the full episodes, again, check those out on SoundCloud or iTunes. Thanks for sticking with us for the 15th Stream of Thought on Darling in the Franxx, and we will see you all next time. Remember, embrace each other, everyone, to the ends of the universe.
またね.